Hey, this is the Rebel Room right here on LasVegasSun.com. I'm Ray Brewer alongside Mike Grimala, and it's March Madness. It's tournament week. UNLV with the feat of winning four straight games to make the NCAA tournament. The journey starts against Air Force. And Mike, is there any possible scenario in your head where UNLV wins 4-4 to make the NCAA tournament? Because they got to win to advance.
I'll say this. They didn't get a terrible draw for considering the kind of season that they had. They've got Air Force in the play-in round, and they swept Air Force 2-0. It wasn't easy, but they swept Air Force. And then waiting for them in round two, or the quarterfinal round, is Utah State. And they split with Utah State this year. They split with Utah State last year. That's a team that they've beaten in recent years. So those first two teams that they would play are combined 3-1 against them this season. So it's not impossible to envision them, beating Air Force, grinding out that win, probably closer than you would like, and then maybe upsetting Utah State. And then, hey, you're in the semifinals. That would be like, I could see that happening. Then two more from there. I don't know. That might be a bridge too far.
Yeah, I know the last time we taped the Rebel Room that we took kind of a critical approach. And I went back and I listened to it, and everything we said was fair, right? You're talking a team that has never this entire season been above 500. And now I'm sitting here thinking, okay, it's tournament week. And you got to remember, I grew up here. I watched them, win the national championship when I was like an eighth grader and, went on that great run the next year. And then when I got to college, they finally got back in the tournament, right? And they won a 16-team WAC, I think, in 97 or 98, and they end up losing to Tulsa in the NCAAs. But they were the sixth best team in that tournament, and they managed to piece it together and get on a roll. And so now every time this week comes around, I say to myself, how could they piece it together? How could they go on a roll? And I say, well, they've got, at any given time, two of the best players on the floor, right? That's not going to change. If Hamilton and Jenkins are in the game, talent-wise, they're the best two players on the floor, right?
Yes and no. Well, yes, in that they are two very good players that could go off in any, like Jenkins can score 30, Hamilton can score 30. But the thing is, they're such one-dimensional that the only way that they are good players is if they are making shots. And they both take very difficult shots. Like Jenkins is three-pointers off the dribble. Bryce Hamilton is pull-up long two-pointers. Those are hard shots to make. But if they make them, they are capable of making them once in a while. If you get a game where they're both hitting, then yes, they could carry you to a win.
Okay, because I didn't think that I've watched the last few games. I've watched on and off some of the games. There are some games I admit where I got things going on and I just haven't watched it. But, the Wyoming game was awful, right? You labeled it as the worst loss of the season or the ugliest loss of the season. I can't remember exactly the word you used. And I'm willing to chalk that up just to they didn't want to be there. It was a makeup game from December because of COVID. And, their seeding for the postseason was kind of already there. And who wants to be in Laramie? Well, let's be honest, on a Saturday night at 8 o'clock.
I can give you an answer to that rhetorical question. Like a team that wants to be there is a winning team. Like a championship team would want to be there and would want to play and would put up a good fight. Like, it's hard to imagine a team that lays down or has their worst performance like that, then winning a conference championship 5 days later, 6 days later. So like that would be the most concerning thing about that game is that you're going straight from your worst performance to now suddenly you need your best performance less than a week later. Like you don't have any time to ramp up. You don't have time to fix problems. You're just sort of hoping for something magical to happen to lift your level of play. So that's why that Wyoming loss was concerning to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't disagree. Again, I'm just trying to find in my head a reason for them to, to get hot at the right time and to somehow navigate this 4-4 and win the league and get onto the NCAAs. Of course, you know how it is. You always want to see the university you attended play in an NCAA tournament. It adds some intriguement to that week. And, you know, I'm just, okay, how could UNLV get there? And I think you bring up a good point. If Hamilton and Jenkins get hot, then they get a chance to hang around. I do not think they're a team that if they fall behind by 8 points that they're going to come back and win. So they're going to have to be within striking distance from the get-go.
I think it's striking distance is a good way to put it. And it's also, if you want hope as a UNLV fan, this is a team that's been within striking distance against a lot of these, you know, the top five teams in the conference. You know, they played Colorado State twice. Both games came down to the final possession. They went down to the final minute against Nevada. They went down to the final possession against Boise State.
What's wrong with
they went
Nevada?
UNR?
Oh my God, the people are listening to this. Go ahead, Grandma.
I'll go back and edit that out. And
then, no, it's fine. It's fine. Let the people.
They've been within striking distance against a lot of these good teams. So they are a team that, while they're mercurial, we've seen them play up to their level of competition this year. When they get a good team on the other end, they tend to raise their level of play. They just haven't been able to close those games out because some games they go 4 minutes without scoring at the end of the game. Other times they let the opponent score on their final eight possessions. So if you can play those teams close and then maybe get a couple breaks down the stretch, it's not, you know, they've played all these teams close. So it's not like they're getting blown out by these teams. They can play up to that top level of competition if they were able to get to the quarters or the semis. So that could give you some hope.
Well, so March basketball is typically when you see the rotation shrink down, which benefits UNLV because they don't have many people in the rotation to begin with. And March basketball is when the pace of play slows down because the possessions become a little more valuable, which also benefits UNLV because they've got no point guard and they can't play at speed. In fact, many people on Twitter on Saturday were complaining about just how slow they were and how Otzelberger is kind of taking the air out of the ball. And I think that they're going to try to shorten the game and see if they could just, you know, say, okay, hey, listen, we may not be able to win the game straight up, but if we could get to the under 10 where it's a one possession game, maybe we could get lucky and anything could happen.
I think I've been advocating to them to do this for most of the, you know, at least for the second half of the season, to shorten games. They should be taking the shot clock on, you know, they should be shooting with 5 seconds or less on the shot clock every time. I think that if I were to give you like, hey, here's a blueprint where you can win, it would be to shorten possessions, go small, get David Jenkins, Caleb Grill, Moses Wood on the floor at the same time, and just center your offense around. We're going to play 55 possessions, 60 possessions. 20 of them are going to be catch and shoot 3-pointers by those three guys. And we're going to try and win a 3-point shooting contest because you do have three guys that can make them in Wood, Jenkins, and Grill. And if you do that, like you're adding a lot of variance to the game. And as an underdog, if you get good shooting performances out of those guys, you can maybe knock someone off. The problem is they don't have a point guard to distribute the ball to them. Like you're counting on Bryce Hamilton to be your distributor and he doesn't pass.
Play like Air Force.
Yeah. But with less, I would do it more like it won't work, but I would do it more like if you picture a James Harden style offense where you just line the perimeter with 3-point shooters, you give him a pick and roll or a high screen or an ISO every time. And as soon as he warps the defense, you kick it out for a three. And Bryce Hamilton would be that guy. And I actually think from watching them, I think that's what they wanted. Once Coleman went out and they realized we don't have a primary ball handler, we don't have a point guard, I think they tried to put Bryce Hamilton in that role and said, hey, we'll let you shoot it or drive every time. But he just doesn't have that passing gene. Like it's not in him to spot the open guy on the drive and kick it out. So they're kind of in a rock and a hard place. But I would like to see them go small, play slow, shoot threes.
Who was supposed to be the backup point guard?
Let me think. Marvin Coleman. I guess they didn't really go in with, and I guess Donovan Yap was like a guy they brought in, but he's a freshman developmental. I don't think they really expected him to play. I think it was probably, it was going to be by committee. It was just going to be Jenkins, Grill, Hamilton behind Coleman.
Yeah, they it just a funky season with the pandemic. And then, you know, UNLV had its season paused, and then Coleman went down, and he was, you know, the glue guy, if you will, in terms of just effort and enthusiasm and ball distribution. And not having the Jimmys and the Joes and the backup has just been really too much to overcome. Yet at the same time, I'm thinking, boy, if they could get to Thursday to the second half of the Utah State game, where it's a one bucket game, gosh, who knows what could happen. And then you give a team hope. If you're right, if you could get to the semis knowing you need two to go to the dance, then I think that opens up a whole other can of worms where, you know, you really guard each possession. In that same breath, I could see them losing Wednesday to Air Force.
Do you want a I gave you some hope. Do you want a less hopeful number? That I was looking at some numbers today, and when was the last time you
think I watched the Wyoming game? I mean, how much hopeful? I mean, geez, I'm dead. Go ahead.
When was the last year that UNLV beat a better seeded team in the tournament, like an upset bracket wise?
Well, I saw your story come in, and I was going to open it, but I haven't seen it yet. I'm trying to think out loud here. God, they've been so awful in the tournament. I used to think that this is right around when Lon left, or maybe Lon's later years and then Dave's years. I used to think because the tournament was in Las Vegas and that UNLV was drawing people then, that sometimes the players had the mentality of, let's just get through the regular season, middle of the pack, and then we'll turn it on for the league tournament and be able to roll, which of course hasn't happened. But when was the last time UNLV is the higher seeded team won?
Yeah, when was the last time they pulled an upset in the Mountain West tournament? It's 2013. It was the last year they went to the NCAA tournament under Dave Rice. But they were a three seed and they beat the two seed in the semis. They beat Colorado State in the semis. Since then, they've played six teams as the underdog and they've lost all six. So like you're talking about them now having to knock off three better teams to win it this year. And they haven't done, they've lost their last six times they've been the underdog in the Mountain West tournament.
Yeah. I can't remember a year where we went into the tournament and I thought they were going to play multiple days or make it to the final four of the tournament.
Like if you can somehow beat Utah State on Thursday, and like, then, hey, I could see like you start to believe and you get that momentum, and then maybe, you know, the light goes on and, you know, Hamilton does start passing the ball out. Jenkins does start, you know, taking better shots. And like, if you can get that momentum and that verve behind you, but getting that first upset, that's, it's just something they haven't done in a long, long time. So that's a less hopeful stat.
So I think an important question is, and you know me, I'm all effort and energy, right? How many, do you think the players think that they got a chance? Do you think they're in? You know what I'm saying? Are they all in?
It's tough to tell this season because we're not around the players. Like it would be normally, you know, in between every game, we'd have like media sessions where we'd go to a practice and you can talk to a couple players afterwards and sort of, you know, fire some pointed questions at them, but then also sort of just sort of gauge, you know, their mentality and their mood. Mm-hmm. And we haven't been able to do that this year. Like they played Wyoming and we got the post game Zoom call with TJ Otzelberger, no players available. So it's just, I did ask Otzelberger in that press conference, like, do you think your players believe, like after the week you had where they lost both makeup games, it's like, do you think they believe they can win the Mountain West tournament? And he said, yeah, like he said, he thinks they still believe, but of course the coach is going to say that. So I don't know. I honestly don't know what their mood is, what their mentality is. All I know from the players is the limited time we get to talk to them after games when they're not saying much and what we see on the court.
Yeah. And I just go back to, you know, to the beginning of the season and no games have been played, and there's all these, you know, David Jenkins was the best player in the world, and we're going to move, you know, he's our guy. He's going to touch the ball 50 times a day and shoot the ball, and he's going to be first team all league. And, you know, the talent is still there. And Altsberger is still a decent game day coach, we suspect. So I just, you know, the only thing that's holding me back from being totally, I really think this could happen, is just the lack of a point guard. Because sometimes when Nick Blake brings the ball up the court, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is where we're at. You know, I'm just thinking there has to be somebody on that 14 player roster that could dribble the ball and pass it. You know, there's not 1 6-foot-2 point guard anywhere on the roster.
Not one. You said dribble and pass it. There's not one that can do both. Like, there's Hamilton is their only guy that can really dribble against a set defense, and he's not a passer, and that's it. I mean, Coleman went down. I'm looking at the, like, Jenkins ended up actually having, you know, a decent shooting year, a pretty good shooting year. One of the best UNLV has had in a long time. He's over 41% from three, mm-hmm. but what he's not getting are other baskets. Like, when he puts the ball on the floor, it's all tough twos. Like, he's not getting anything easy. Mm-hmm. So it's like, they don't have a point guard that can run a pick and roll, get inside the defense, you know, make that first pass that, you know, then the defense is constantly rotating, trying to catch up to each subsequent pass. Like, they just don't have possessions like that. Yeah. And it makes scoring really, really tough, because you have to grind every shot, and every shot is contested. Every pass is contested. It's tough what they're trying to do.
Yeah. And the weird part is, you know, we're now through 2 years of the TJ Altsberger era, and this offseason, they're going to have to blow it up, man, because Marvin got three, right? This is year three. You know, you can't have another losing record. Or you can't finish in the middle of the Mountain West. You know, something's got to give here.
And I do think TJ Altsberger would get the benefit of the doubt on that fourth year, just because the AD hired him. Like, Desiree Reed-Francois, she inherited Menzies. He did not get the benefit of the doubt after year three. I think
I would take a Menzies team right now over, you know what I'm saying, talent wise.
Like, someone pointed out on Twitter today, like, their best players this year were Bryce Hamilton and Mbake Jean, and they're both Menzies guys. Like, Otzelberger's had two recruiting classes, and they've missed on some guys. That Jenkins wasn't what they thought he would be. They thought Eduardo Delcati would be better. Like, they thought he'd be a contributing player. He hasn't really gotten on the court this year. They've got a bunch of those freshmen who just have not played and just don't look like they're going to be good enough. It's a big off season for them. They're going to have to hit on some transfers, immediate transfer guys right away.
Yeah. And even the class they have signed, you take away Alvin, or what's his name?
Arthur Kaluma.
I was thinking Alvin Kamara from the Saints. Right. I mean, it's not looking good, man. Just not totally unrelated, but I was writing, it's a real popular baseball coach, Tom Appleyard, died. And I was talking to one of his former players, and the guy mentioned how much he loved UNLV. And he says, they love our coverage, but Appleyard was just so frustrated that UNLV couldn't win a game. And I'm thinking to myself, how many longtime Vegas folks are out there who love the Rebels, right? Live and die with the Rebels. And are just massively frustrated by this. And I think I saw another thing on Twitter where a longtime supporter of the program put something up about how he was watching the local news. I don't know what station. And they went through their whole sports show, and they ran out of time before they could show UNLV highlights. So they were like, hey, go online for the UNLV score. Mm. And the guy's like, this is where it's become. You know, I remember I was in Denver or whatever when they won the Natty, and now we can't even get the score on, you know, the local news.
Yeah, this was a UNLV town. They've got some stiff competition now.
And now they're coming back next year, presumably with fans, right?
I mean, I am not a health and safety expert, but I would assume so. Like, you figure, they say they should have vaccines out to most of the country by, you know, the summer. So fingers crossed.
But it's just, this is a real, I mean, golly, from the day Dave got fired until today, I mean, this is just.
You know what I was thinking about today? It was at the time, they missed, like, they were in the running for last year, Muani Wilkinson and Julian Strother, a couple of guys that they were finalists for and ended up not getting. And at the time, it was like, oh, well, you know, Otzeberger didn't have that long to recruit them. He kind of got a late start. Mm-hmm. And that's okay, because Zion Collins is the guy they're really after. Like, they and they still got mm-hmm. a chance at him. And now that Collins is out, those, you know, coming so close and missing on Strother and Wilkinson, that's mm-hmm. looming very large right now, considering the last high school class they brought in their place. Those guys are not playing and contributing. It's just, you know, apropos of nothing, just something I was thinking about today. Like,
and the thing is, are those guys bounce back guys though? You know, Strother, you know, only gets on the floor when they're up by 20 in the second half, but he has a chance to win a natty this year, right?
Exactly.
You know, and then Wilkinson's, he's played a lot, but he's not putting up any numbers. It is what it is, but some, you just look at all these other teams like Wyoming, that kid that missed the dunk for Wyoming. He was a no-name prospect who's like the best freshman in the league, right?
Mm-hmm. Marcus Williams.
Yeah. And you look at like the Boise roster. They got the one kid out of New York. Can't remember his name. Lister. Kid that was real small and he put some weight on.
You talking about Derek Alston?
Alston, yeah. I was close, right?
Yeah, you got it.
But these teams that are, you know, Colorado State, they don't got any three-star recruits.
And, yeah.
You know, they're winning with guys that they're coaching up. And I just think the guys that UNLV took, and we talked about this last week, Mike, they just – It's. I tell you, you may think I'm crazy, but you don't say it like as much as Case does. But like when Bobby Houck was here, he recruited like he was at Montana. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And at least you see with like Marcus Arroyo, the guy recruits like he's at Oregon. He's not going after Mountain West guys. And I think that TJ recruited like he was still at South Dakota.
I do think they ended up taking a lot of those. The first year they did, his first offseason, he didn't take any high school players. The second year we saw them, they almost, like I said, they went after Strother. They went after Wilkinson hard. They tried to get those guys. They just missed, near misses. And then, so that was their second recruiting class. They ended up taking, you know, Donovan Yap, Jaylon Martinez, guys who with big obvious flaws in their game, but maybe worth, you know, taking a gamble on. And then his second time he went in the high school class, we saw him get Zion Collins, Arthur Kaluma, Keyshawn Gilbert. That's a great class. That's an unbelievable Mountain West recruiting class. It's just, it didn't work out because of Collins' situation. But so I can't kill Otzeberger for the recruiting, because they have gone after those guys. They've tried to get blue chippers, and in some cases they've gotten them. And it's just sometimes.
He did a great job, Mike, last in this class right now. Saying Collins would have, if Collins makes it and they got, you know, a legit top 40 guy in Kaluma, and I like Gilbert. I think he plays hard and I think he'd be a great rotation guy. But the second class is where he really shot himself in the foot. Martinez, yeah.
They took six high school kids, and in hindsight, what they should have done is said, like, we need a point guard. Like, we don't want a developmental point guard. We're not going to take one. Instead of giving this four-year scholarship to Donovan Yap, let's go on the transfer market and get someone who can play right away. Like, let's get a transfer or a grad transfer or someone who can come in and give us actual minutes this year in case something happens to Marvin Coleman. Or in addition to Marvin Coleman was great last year playing with another point guard when he played with Mitchell Long at the same time. So, hey, let's bring in another point guard so we can run that back. And they should have done that 100% over instead of taking six true high school players and four of them are not on the court.
Of those six, the only two that are worth keeping are Blake and Tillis, right?
Yeah, I think they like Reese Brown a little bit, but yeah, the other three are probably not going to, they're not probably not long for UNLV, I would say.
Yeah.
So it's tough. It's tough to take a big class like that. They wanted to, I can see the reasoning behind it. It's like, hey, let's get a high school class in here. Six guys, we'll build a foundation. We'll get some long-term players in here. But in retrospect, the right move would have been to maybe take half of that, take three high schoolers, go after and add three more transfers, and so that you're more fortified this year.
Yeah. Again, they haven't had a winning record at any point this year. What are they, like 10 and 12 right now?
They are 11 and 14 overall.
And two of those wins came
two of those non-division ones.
Of the poor, right?
So, yeah, so really 11 and 12.
No, 9 and 14.
Oh, yeah. 9 and 14, that's right.
Arguably one of the worst years in program history.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking Rolly Massimino-esque here. And it's, you know, but it could all be righted this week, brother.
They've got a shot to make some noise. I hope they can I think they'll take care of Air Force in that play-in round. And then my hope is that we get a good game on Thursday against Utah State. I think they can put up a fight. I think they match up stylistically with Zhang on Kata. I think they can do some things to help them match up there. So,
okay, let me ask you this. I got two things before we log off. But first, who wins the tournament? I got my pick. Who do you like?
No, I haven't even really thought about it. You know, I think I would probably pick San Diego State. Like, they're just the team that I know of what I'm going to get from them. I also like Colorado State a lot just because I love Isaiah Stevens. So I would, one of those two teams. I would probably.
I like San Diego State because they've been there and done that. And I think top to bottom, they got the best roster in the league. I really do. I worry about their offense.
I was just about to say the one question with San Diego State is late game. You need a bucket. Like, what are you doing? Like, Utah State won the last two Mountain West championships. They gave the ball to Sam Merrill and you knew he would make something happen. San Diego State, like Matt Mitchell is probably their best offensive player, but he's not really like a give him the ball and let him go type guy. So that'd be my one question about, they sort of have to manufacture their offense. So we'll have to see how they win those close games.
Yeah, well, props to me. As you know, Michael, I do our Sun Super 7 every year.
Great job.
And the girls' Super 7 is always a little bit of a battle because there's a lot of girls that are tweeners. And the last time we did this, so the 2019-2020 season, there's probably 11 or 12 kids to pick from that had legitimate arguments. And one of the girls on the fence was Desiree from the Lady Rebels. She went on there. I took some heat from some non-DO people. She's only the Mountain West player of the year, Ricky.
Oh, so this is a victory lap for you. That's what this is.
But the Lady Rebels, undefeated on the road, number two seed in the league, got a legit chance to win the tourney. And the coaches of Durango grad, LaRock, the Thomas sisters, Centennial grads, Desert Oasis. Not bad. Grimala.
They turned it around in 1 year.
Yeah. Now, yeah, they did. They did. And they really didn't have a legit great score on the team. So shout out to them. And who knows what's going to happen this week. They got a chance to make a little bit of a run. So, you know, I just hate the fact that And we go through this 8 times a year. We podcast 10 times a year, 9 times I say this. But UNLV is in the greatest city in the Mountain West. It's got the best tradition in the Mountain West and the best facilities in the Mountain West. Best facilities, best tradition, best opportunity after you graduate, and yet football and basketball can't get out of their own way.
I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know. It's if there was one thing that then you'd probably be able to solve it, but it's not one thing that's keeping basketball and football down. It's a bunch of different contributing factors. It's like, and like trying to plug a dam, like we're not recruiting well enough. Well, let's bring in some blue chippers. And once you plug that hole, it's like another hole springs up and it's like, oh, now all your guys are one and done and you don't have enough experience year after year. So then you bring in some program guys. It's like, I don't know. It's hard. It must be harder than we think, than you and I think, because no one seems to be able to do it to get UNLV back to the NCAAs.
I mean, all I know is that the level of talent right now, like, I mean, Dave recruited at a high level and he's got, you know, guys like Ken Burch and Derek Jones and McCaw who were in the NBA, but let's not even go there. If you go back to like Lon's teams, right? Had just solid guys. Like you talk about program guys, look at like Oscar Belfield and Anthony Marshall and Justin Hawkins, right? I mean, those are guys that had 4 great years, played in a lot of important games. And not only did they come in with a certain level of talent, they just developed that talent. You know what I'm saying? And now, listen, Marvin Coleman's a great guy, Super 7. By me, 7th spot, right? Played great high-level AAU at the Las Vegas Prospects. Wears his emotion on the sleeve. Smart guy. Dude was a walk-on, right? The whole house of cards fumbles because a former walk-on hurts his calf. What's that? You don't have a backup point guard in the whole program? I mean, somewhere when I'm putting a team together, I'm like, who's going to dribble the ball from that side of the court to the other? That's the whole point of basketball, right?
They should have seen it coming. Like, I can't come up with a better explanation than that. Like, that's something that you have to account for. Like, because Coleman, even if he stays healthy, like, he can't play 40 minutes a night. Like, who's handling the ball when he's out of the game? Yeah. It turns out the answer is no one.
And if I'm a football coach and I'm looking at my roster, I want to have a quarterback that's actually played in a college football game before. It's prerequisite. I don't want to go out there. Did you pull up your story real fast on the football schedule? Bobby and Tony would have loved this schedule. This is the best schedule that UNLV, the most easily manageable to navigate schedule in the history of UNLV football. Do you see it?
It's taking a minute on my computer here. Hold on.
Okay. Here. I got it right here. I don't want to go over you though, Grimala.
It's loading. I got it.
Okay. So Eastern Washington home opener, right? That's a pretty good Big Sky team, but you should win that game, right?
You think UNLV will be favored in that game?
Again, on a normal year,
it's at home.
You should be able just to line up and run through them because your linemen should be bigger than theirs. But again, UNLV has lost to Northern Arizona and Southern Utah in recent memory. But if you get credit for one of these, why not? Then you go Arizona State and Iowa State, 2 losses, right?
Most likely.
Most certainly. Even though I think Herm Edwards is massively overrated at Arizona State, but he's got Jimmies and Joes, and there's just a massive talent disparity, okay? Iowa State, one of the best coached teams in the nation, okay? You're going there, you're collecting some money. Every team's got to go through it. And then at Fresno. So you could be 1-3, correct?
Yep.
Okay, if you're lucky. Then all of a sudden, Texas San Antonio, 2-3, right?
They went, when I wrote the story, I looked them up. They went 7-5 last year with a first year coach. So that I don't know who like they're losing and who's like who's coming back from that team, but from the outside looking in, just they seem to be a team on the rise. I wouldn't chalk that up as a win.
Are they on the road? Oh, the Iowa State game is here. Okay, so they're on the road for 3 out of 4.
Yes.
And, maybe the schedule.
No, three out of the first 5 on the road at Arizona State. Then Iowa State comes here. Then they go to Fresno, to San Antonio.
They got to win one of those Fresno San Antonio games because I don't think they're beating Reno, right? Even though they've beaten Reno at Reno the last two times.
And they got San Jose State at home before they get to Reno.
Yeah, and I guarantee you that Aurora cares more about beating San Jose State at home than he does winning the Cannon. Guarantee you.
That's a tough schedule. How many are you going to put out? Let's get on the record for how many wins you think for UNLV football this year.
Well, I thought maybe because I read the last line of the story first, but I'm like, boy, they avoid Boise, CSU, and Wyoming. I'm like, that's a great draw. Get them wiped off. And I'm thinking, you know, Air Force, they always play close because Air Force, you know, New Mexico sucks. San Jose is always beatable, even though they won the league. But now I look at this and I'm like, if they get 2 or 3 wins, it'd be a miracle, right?
I said on Twitter, I think they could maybe get to 3 wins. I just don't know which 3 they might win. And also, like, there's still so much. We just don't know what UNLV is going to be this year. They could be a 3-win team. They could be a 0-win team again. If, you know, they might not have a quarterback.
That's not only that, they might not have anybody that can make a tackle. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, you brought up the quarterback room going into this season. Like, they just might not have a quarterback on this team that can play. So,
yeah,
we'll just have to wait and see. But
I think you're right. I think a lot hinges on. We all agree that, and I say we, you and me, and the general fan, that there's a good chance they're going to add a quarterback to the mix before kickoff.
I would think so.
And I didn't think that Brumfield was awful this year.
He only played a little. I didn't see much when he was out there.
I liked him better than the Rodgers kid.
Rodgers, I thought Brumfield showed me more than Rodgers, but that was not a very high bar to clear.
Okay. And then they got this kid in from Hawaii who – again, it's tough unless you're turning over the keys of the Cadillac to like Matt Barkley from Matter Day to USC or Josh Rosen to UCLA or, you know, one of those major 5-star guys. It's tough to say, oh, they found some random 3-star in wherever, and they're going to develop him. So anyways, Mike, we've gone on for way too long, my brother. For Mike, I'm Ray. Thank you for listening. And who knows, maybe next week we'll be talking about the Rebels going to the NCAA tournament.